Okay, folks, this is Elvin Shamroth here. I'm the CEO of Exampra, and I want to welcome all of you to this, the first teleseminar of the year. I always enjoy getting people as early on in the process as we can, because the sooner we, so to speak, can sink our teeth into you and show you the better way to prepare for these boards, the more impact we can have, and that just translates into better results. So I thank you all for joining us. What I want to really do with this session is just give you some background of what we're going to be doing. And if there's any time left over, I may, if it's possible, I'm not sure, I may open up the call. Right now, everyone is muted. So I try and keep these seminars to about 45 minutes in duration. And what we talk about, typically we will get two or so candidates to volunteer to join us on the hot seat. And what that means is when I mute everyone out, you will not be muted. So I can have a conversation with you, and we can discuss whatever your concern is. Typically, we talk about cases on your case list that are problematic. Maybe there was a complication. You're not sure how to present this. You're not sure how to defend that. And we go through it. And it's incredible, because even though it may be somewhat specific to you, there are tremendous lessons that are relevant for everyone listening in. And I will always keep it in mind that not everyone has the same kind of issue, and I will draw the generalizations out of your case. It's a very rare incident when someone has such a specific case that is really not relevant to anyone else. And what I do in that situation, I get them to phone the office, and I have a private conversation with them, so I don't waste everyone else's time. But I do want to encourage you folks to volunteer. I'm telling you honestly and openly, if you folks don't volunteer, the value of these sessions becomes minimal, and there's no point in doing it. So it really, it depends on you folks. Don't be shy to volunteer. I will never, ever mention your last name, so you will remain anonymous. And so, you know, if I ask you a question and you don't know the answer to it, you don't need to feel bad that your colleagues are going to know that you maybe got a particular question wrong. No one will know who you are. So I encourage you to volunteer. And what that really means is perhaps on the Wednesday or Thursday, in the middle of the week, or even later, send us an email to the office, info@exampra.com, with your question. I encourage you to send an attachment of the page that contains the case that you're referring to, and because it's often very important that I get to see, to understand not only the case, but how you've written it up. Because as we work together more and more as the months go by, you will see how, and I'll touch on this in a moment, the way you write up a case can make a huge difference. So, you know, I encourage you to volunteer. Give the office a call if you have any questions about volunteering. My staff will be more than happy to explain it to you. And again, I'm a pretty benign and benevolent guy. I'm not like how some of the examiners might be, which is tough and hard-nosed. I'm a decent guy. I'm not going to embarrass anyone, so I encourage you all to volunteer. And you all have problem cases. I will go so far as to say, and we're 7 months, we're beyond the halfway mark of collecting cases now. If you do not have any complications, you've got a problem. Because everyone has complications. And I'll go one step further. This is critical to appreciate. All of you, and the virtually all of you, are aware of the complications that you have. What's worse, what's really is bad, is if you have a contradiction or a complication and you're not aware of it, that's a problem. We'll talk more about that later. But the fact that you've got complications on your case list is magnificent. And I want all of you folks to have a paradigm shift in your thinking. Don't be fearful of your complications. Learn to treasure them, because it's in those complications that it's very easy to work out what they're going to ask you. And if you know what they're going to ask you, you can prepare accordingly, and you've just made a world of difference to your prognosis in the exam. I took my exam 25 years ago or so. When I walked out of my exam, I realized in retrospect that I had correctly predicted 75% of the questions. Now, how the hell can you fail an exam if you know 75% of the questions before you walk in? And the truth is, it's not difficult to work this out. And we'll go over that with you as well. We've got a whole 9-10 months ahead of us to work this all out. But I want to emphasize, your case list represents 50% of your exam. The case list you have incredible control over. You can't control at all what structured cases you might get in OBGYN and office. That's the luck of the draw. But the case list, you've got to put all the relevant cases in OBGYN. But offices, and even there, you've got tremendous say in how you write it up. And in the office section, you choose totally what you want. So what I want to drive home today is that I don't want you to be automatons and just enter your case into the computer without thinking. You need to work out, and I'm going to talk a lot more about this as the year goes by. I speak of reverse engineering. That's what I wanted to say. I don't want you to write the case up and then face whatever questions the examiner asks you, and you just hope and pray that you can answer them. You need to reverse the process. And by that I mean, and it sounds crazy, you're going to think I'm nuts, but it works beautifully, folks. You reverse the process. You decide now what subjects, what topics, what questions would I love to get in the exam. And if I got those questions, I could handle them very well, and I would score very well. So the, you reverse the process. The first thing you ask yourself is, what questions do I want? Then you go and look at your cases and see, based on what cases you have, where can I get this desired question into the conversation? Where can I get that desired question into the conversation? And once you've selected your cases, then you write up that case in such a way that it almost begs or forces the examiner to ask you the question, which happens to be the question you're looking for. Let me give. I love this example. I always mention it. Let's say, just to give you an example of what I'm talking about. Let's say in OB, you would love to have a conversation on ISA immunization. All you need to do, you know, 15% of our patients are Rh negative. So find any one of them. If you've got your 70 patients on your list, you should have about 10 cases on average that are Rh negative. If a patient, for whatever reason, did not get RhoGAM, and you want to talk about ISA immunization, how do you write it up? So in the antenatal complications column, you'd write Rh negative. And then in the treatment column, instead of leaving it blank, don't be shy to do this. It works. I've done this with countless candidates in the past. In the treatment column, don't just leave it blank because RhoGAM wasn't given. Instead, you actually write RhoGAM not given. And if you want, you put an exclamation mark after that. If the examiner is cruising through your case list and sees that you've got a patient who's Rh negative and you didn't give RhoGAM, they have to ask you the question, why not? And it could be for simple things like the father of the baby's Rh negative. She missed a critical last 2 months of an antenatal visit. She was already ISA immunized. That whatever the reason is somewhat irrelevant. The point is that the examiner sees this, and they're almost obligated to ask the question. Now, once you get the question on why didn't she get RhoGAM, you're just a hair's breadth away from having a conversation on ISA immunization. And folks, this is what I mean when I talk about reverse engineering. You folks, I can't implore you enough to do this. In the beginning, it will take a little bit of time, but very quickly you'll get the hang of it, and it becomes second nature and very quick and easy to do it. So I want to encourage you to do that. I want to emphasize again: do not sanitize your case list by moving or trying to minimize complications. Take ownership of them, be comfortable with them, and plan your conversations about them, because those are the easiest conversations to predict. I will also at this point make a shameless promotion, and that is the following. of all the things that we do at ExamPro, the single most important thing that you can do with us is to attend our 1.5-day cases construction course. It's online. We also provide day one of that live, which is very effective. It's typically held in Baltimore, by the way, and I think it's May. But if you can come to that, you'll find it that much more rich. But if there's one thing that you do with us, let it be that you come to the cases construction course. If not live in person, then online. It will change completely the way you look at your case list, the way you construct your case list, and to the extent that you can, the way you choose cases. It's really huge. And when after you've attended, you will say to yourself, because this has happened invariably with everyone, I'm so pleased I came to this. It really is good. And I know this sounds like a shameless promotion, and in a sense it is. But folks, as you get to know me, my staff, and my faculty, we will not recommend something to you if we don't think it'll benefit you. Some people want to spend a lot of money on certain services that we provide, and we'll have a conversation with them, and many times we will say, don't waste your money. You can spend a lot less, or you don't even have to spend anything, but this service is not for you. We're very open and honest about helping our candidates, and when I say to you, if you at all possibly can, the one thing that you should do is come to our cases construction course. I'm being totally open and honest with you about that. It'll change everything in terms of constructing your case list. Now, I've been talking about case lists all the time because until we get past the case list submission deadline, 99% of you are concerned about problems that you've got on your case list. So we talk about case list construction and a little bit of case list review. After the deadline for submission has passed, we stop talking about case list construction because that's pointless now. But we do talk about case list review, and we start talking a lot more about oral exam technique, which is also vitally important. Folks, the vast majority of you have had virtually no experience in an oral exam environment. And this is the most important exam of your life. And you've got no experience in this medium. And it sounds crazy, but you have to practice talking. You have to practice effectively and efficiently describing, presenting a case, and engaging in a conversation on the case and the management thereof. And the most important thing that you can do in this regard is just to practice talking in a mock oral environment scenario. Do this with yourselves, amongst yourselves, and do it with us if you want. But you must do as much of this as you can. And I know right now you're not really thinking about that. And I understand that most of your energy must be put into the cases construction. But to the extent that you can, in parallel, start practicing discussing your cases with friends, with colleagues, with nursing staff, if it's feasible. Just get used to talking about your cases. Really, really important. So, with that being said, folks, we're a relatively small crowd today because it's our first. And by the way, we do this every other week, so the next one will be in 2 weeks' time. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to unmute everyone. All I'm asking is that if there's any background noise, please can you move to a room where there's no background noise, because otherwise we won't hear anything. I'm going to unmute everyone. And if anyone has a question regarding the exam, regarding a case, regarding anything relating to where you guys folks are at the moment, all I would ask is shout out your first name. I'll acknowledge, and then we'll have a conversation. So I encourage you, don't be shy. As I said, I'm a benign character. Don't be shy to volunteer. So I'm going to unmute. Hang on 1 second. I need to. Okay, so I'm throwing it out to you folks. We've still got a lot of time. The first session is typically shorter, but I'm throwing out, if anyone has any questions whatsoever, please shout out your first name, and then I'll acknowledge. Come on, folks. Hi. Don't be shy. What's your name?
Hi, I'm Carolina. Can you hear me?
Carolina, hi there. Carolina, thank you so much for volunteering. Go ahead. What's your question?
I have a few patients where I've managed them for their entire pregnancy and the postpartum period, but I wasn't at delivery either because I wasn't on call or it was the weekend.
Very good question.
And I get confused if I should include them on my list or not.
I knew you were going there. Very, very good question. On the OB side, the key criteria whether you have to account for that patient or not is if you did the delivery, which you just told us you didn't do. If you did the delivery and everything was completely normal, you don't need to list that case. But your question is a little different. You did everything from conception to postpartum, but you missed the delivery. Strictly speaking, she doesn't have to be on your case list. Now, Carolina, let me ask you a question. Is this a interesting case? Maybe she's a cardiac and diabetic and lupus patient. She had a previous cerclage. Is there something interesting about this case that would possibly generate a conversation that you would be comfortable to engage in?
Yes, for a couple of them, yes, they did have something like unique.
Sure, let's take those few first. Look at the situation. These are interesting cases. You did everything except the delivery. But they're interesting cases. They're worthy of a discussion. If you put them on, you don't need to, as Aboga said. But if you put them on, you include them, you've given ABOG more than what they're asking for. You follow? Let's say you would have 45 patients, and 5 of them are these interesting cases, even though you didn't deliver them. So strictly speaking, you have 40, but you're listing 45. You're giving ABOG more than what they ask for. I've never, ever seen that being a problem. The only time where it can become a problem is if you've got, let's say, 5 cases, plus all your other listed cases on OB, gives you a total of 22. In this situation, strictly speaking, those 5 cases that you didn't deliver don't count. So if they were to check up for whatever reason, you would drop from 22 down to 17. Now your case list is inadmissible because you need a minimum of 20 cases that count. You follow?
Yes.
So I have no problem with you using these cases, provided you're giving ABOG more than what they ask for, and you've got more than 20 cases that count without relying on these additional cases. The opposite, I would not recommend at all. Do not, and I say this in loud capital letters, do not give ABOG less than what they're asking for. Don't inadvertently leave a case off your case list, which should be on, because that can cause problems. So do you follow? Are you comfortable with the answer?
Yes, I feel that answers my question.
Okay, good. Very good. All right, Carolina, thank you so much. Is there anyone who has a question who just wants to shout out their name, and I'll do my best to answer it? Come on,
yeah,
folks.
Yeah, my name's Sarah.
Dara, did you say? Yes.
Sarah.
Did you say Dara? Dara, thank you once again for volunteering. Go ahead and share with us your concern, your question.
So mine's kind of the opposite of what was just asked, but so the
yes.
way the practice works, say I walked in to my L&D shift and there's a C-section going for Cat 2 tones. I've never met the patient before, but I'm doing the C-section. Maybe there's a bad outcome, you know, like the baby's had to be admitted to NICU.
Let's take the worst case scenario. There's a maternal death. Carry on. Yeah?
Yeah. So those cases, those must be included, right? Because I was one who was the delivering provider, even though I wasn't part of any of the management that led up to perhaps that.
Your thinking is 100% correct. That's exactly the scenario that I was referring to. Don't give them less, because they can cause a lot of grief for you if they discover that you left off a case that happened to be a maternal death. Not a good thing. And just by the way, in this case, let's say this patient had severe mitral stenosis or aortic stenosis, which had a whole issue, and she was atrial fibrillation. She was on blood thinners, aspirin, whatever it was. All you did was the C-section. Can they ask you about anything during the antepartum or postpartum period? The answer is yes. But don't jump off buildings, folks. Don't panic. Because in the exam, you folks are going to hear me say this many times through the next 8-9 months. just be open and honest. So if they ask you how was she managed when she entered the third trimester, or the last 4 weeks of pregnancy, or whatever, you would say in the exam, you know, I did the C-section on, by the way, doing a C-section on a cardiac patient is not a good idea. Darren, what's the best way to deliver a cardiac patient? Just by the way. Any idea?
Vaginal delivery?
Assisted vaginal delivery. You don't want them to push. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, getting back to the point that I was making. How did you manage it 4 weeks prior to her due date? You said, you know, this patient was sent for a elective C-section on the day in our practice when I was doing the C-section. So I never saw this patient at all until the morning of the C-section. By the way, some of you listening in may have this situation. If you accept a patient for a procedure just because you're doing that procedure that day, you've got to be comfortable that just because someone else said she needs a C-section today, you've got to be comfortable that you agree with that, because you're going to have to defend that decision. You take it on yourself that you agree with the assessment. That's just as an aside. But getting back to the issue, if that asking how did you manage it in the last 4 weeks of a pregnancy? You said in my practice, this patient had her C-section on the day that I was doing C-section. As such, I never saw her. Now, if you stop there, the examiner's not going to let you get away with it. They're going to say, well, tell me, what did your colleague do? You know? And the way to preempt that is to do the following. Be open and honest. I never managed her at all during her antepartum period. But if I had managed her, my management would have been something along the following lines, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And keep in mind, if you managed her, they'd expect your level of understanding to be reasonably high. If you didn't manage her, but you're just using your background knowledge and basic principles, the bar might be just a little bit lower. Because after all, you didn't manage her. You're just giving a hypothetical answer. So that's what I would encourage you. You know, you say, I didn't manage her, but this is what I would do if I was in that situation. So, Darren, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Excellent. Good. We'll take one more question if anyone wants. Anyone want to shout out their name, first name? Come on, folks. Don't be shy. Otherwise, this is going to be pretty much the end of the teleseminar. Anyone, come on. Shout out a first name. We can have a conversation. Going once, going twice, last shot, anyone? Okay. All right. So, look, folks, I usually like to get it to about 45 minutes. Sometimes it goes a little longer. But we didn't even scratch the surface today. There is so much to share with you. It's exciting. The key thing is don't let your cases get away from you. Stay ahead of the case list. Be in control. Be proactive. And I will say one last thing. With respect to coming to the caseless construction course, if you haven't already attended, I would encourage you strongly to watch the or attend the course as soon as you can. Because once you've attended that course, like I said, it will change the entire way you look at your case list. And it's best for you to reach that realization as soon as possible. So all I can say is, attend the cases construction course and do that as soon as possible. Either the online recorded course or the live course, which will be in May in Baltimore, is, in fact, I'm just checking, just bear with me one second. Let's see, here it is. Yeah, it's on Sunday the 10th of May. If you can come to that, that's slightly preferred. It's more interactive. I think the learning is better always in a live in-person situation than on Zoom or on a pre-recorded setup. So it's always preferred if you could do that. But that's the single most important thing, in my view, that you can do for yourselves now to help you with the board, and do it as soon as possible. So, Carolina, thank you so much for volunteering. Dara, thank you so much for volunteering. The rest of you, please tell your colleagues about this. It's a free service. Free is good. It really can be a lot of fun. And as you see, it's totally unscripted. And the more involvement and interaction we get, the better it is for everyone. So I need next week to have at least one volunteer, preferably two. Please get in touch with the office the week before and submit your question, your case, and then we can have a meaningful conversation. Otherwise, it will be a very short teleconference, okay? All right, folks, that's it. Thank you once again for everyone, and we'll do this again in 2 weeks' time. Thank you, and all the best.